Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Will.
This is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo episode 59 of the best damn Nintendo podcast on
really?
The internet. Yes.
59. Of the official show.
Right, we only number the official show.
Okay, so
for
50,
some reason.
So 59, and we do one every month.
Yes.
And so there's 12 months.
Yes.
That is almost 3 years. Is that math right?
If by 3 you mean 5, then yes.
Wow.
It is almost 3 years.
You really brought your A game tonight,
doesn't you? I know, right? Off to a good start.
Next month it will be 5 years, yes.
We need to come up with something special to do.
I already told you guys what we're going to do.
What are we doing?
We're not going to blow
more,
each other.
Not
we're,
more butt sex, all right? There's only so much I can take.
I like how we are on the same page there.
Right?
Here's the thing. I'm always the one that drinks alcohol during the recordings.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So you guys are the ones that have to drink, and I can't.
You're going to do the Stone Cold Sober?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. We're going to get wasted for it. That's right. I actually support this.
Anyway, so we can discuss this off the show.
What, being wasted and doing a podcast?
Yes.
Fireball shots. Fireball shots.
You know, there is a vodka called Dude Vodka,
mm-hmm.
and I know you come up with some dirty stuff, but no, it tastes like Mountain Dew. So you add it to Mountain Dew, so you don't realize you're drinking vodka, which is kind of like, what's the point? But still, it's an easy way to get wasted.
Well, it doesn't like negate the effects of it.
No,
is that the point?
Well, the point is to taste the alcohol. So it's like, oh, so
you're just drinking it to get wasted. So you're trying to mask the taste of alcohol with the taste of something more disgusting than alcohol and Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew is like rank. Yeah, I know, but it's just, so you're saying they're just drinking a ton of Mountain Dew now.
God.
Can we get like some schnapps that taste like RC Cola? Does that exist?
Well, you know.
So on the official show, we talk about news, we talk about new releases, and we preview the next month's games. So let's get down to it. There's quite a bit of news to get through. We probably won't spend too much time on it, though. So there's some new hardware coming out. There is a Hyrule Edition for the new 3DS XL coming to North America. Also, the new 3DS standard size is coming to North America. It was a hotly debated topic whether it would or not. So you can get it now, but you can only get it in the Animal Crossing bundle for Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer. Wes, I already know you got yours pre-ordered.
Oh my god, I cannot wait.
You are ready.
To put that gun in my mouth and pull the trigger.
Well, no, Wes, this is a game built around your love of interior design, right? That's the idea?
Sure.
Thanks for taking that and running with it.
Have you seen my bedroom?
Yes. So, we've got some game announcements. Ace Attorney 6 was announced for the 3DS and also confirmed for a Western release within days of each other. So, that probably means that the most recent Ace Attorney game will probably not be coming to North America. It was kind of a weird one anyway. It was an Ace Attorney game based in the 1800s. Sherlock Holmes is involved, and they're in some sort of like Japanese area of London. Those games are weird. These games are real weird.
Mm-hmm.
Pikmin 4 was announced kind of in this left-handed way. Shigeru Miyamoto was doing an interview, and he just mentioned like, oh yeah, and we're doing Pikmin 4, and it's actually pretty close to completion. So, so that was the thing. Like, they weren't even, like, I think they were talking about, like, potential for Pikmin movie or the Pikmin shorts or something like that. And he was like, oh, yeah, and by the way, Pikmin 4 exists.
Pikmin movie?
Oh, yeah, the idea has been kicked around a couple of times about, like, a feature-length Pikmin movie. They've already done, like, shorts. They've done, like, 5-minute shorts with Pikmin before. I don't know how that would look over, like, an hour and a half.
Well, didn't they make really boring?
I thought they made a live-action Phoenix Wright movie, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do that?
Yeah.
Well, those games were all dialogue anyway, so I think that lends itself a little bit more to...
I mean, the only person there that actually knows how to talk would be Olimar.
He just grunts.
He just grunts around, and these little weird things are following him, so I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think a lot of, like, the animal rights people were getting involved. He's just grabbing these things and throwing them against rocks. It's terrible.
I mean, I guess... I don't know.
Be like, it's okay, they're plants.
The vegetarians aren't involved. The vegetarians, like, aren't advocates for plant rights. They are people who eat only plants.
I know.
That was reversed.
I'm glad you caught that.
So, another game announcements. Pokemon Go was announced. We'll actually probably spend a bit more time with this in the Pokemon show. That seems a little bit more apropos. But it was a thing. It was announced. So you'll be able to download a Pokemon AR game on your cell phone.
I think you're fine talking about it here because we got enough to talk about on the Pokemon show. They go on long enough.
I mean, do you have anything you want to say for Pokemon Go?
No, I'm just saying, if there is anything, go ahead and just knock it out. Pokemon shows are too long.
No, we're going to... No, Pokemon show. I've already decided. Because I have no notes prepared.
Oh, all right.
Well, but the big news for the month was
one
that...
One job, John. I'm real snappy today. I don't know what's wrong with me.
And you're doing yours. This is why we bring you on. So, we have a new president of Nintendo, Tatsumi Kimishima. And he was formerly president of Nintendo of America. And then he moved over to Nintendo Japan in recent years after Reggie... moved up to CEO of Nintendo of America. He was working in the human resources division of Nintendo for the past several years. He also was former president of the Pokemon Company, and he's done a couple of different gigs, usually as a sort of official. He was never really involved too much in game development or game design, anything like that, more of a business person in the gaming arena. And he, I think, has a temporary contract for 1 year with the potential to extend it. And this is more of like a stabilizing move rather than a move into the future. It's taking someone that they know who has been in this sort of position before, who can sort of run the business end of things, because after Iwata passed on, they had Miyamoto and Takeda both kind of doing like the dual CEO responsibilities, and that's not really what either of them are suited for. But speaking of those two, there have also been some other personnel shifts since Goddamn it, I just fucked up the name. I thought I got it so well the first time.
He's gonna show up at your house and punch you in the face.
That would be great.
That'd be fantastic. Like, thank you, sir. I'll have another.
Jeff Smith.
So, since Jeff is now... I'm rolling with that. Since Jeff is now the president. So, some other personnel have been shifted around. Not really too many big... earth-shattering changes, more of retitling people in sort of roles that they already had. So Miyamoto, instead of being like a general manager, a general producer of Nintendo EAD, he is now just a creative fellow. So basically just kind of sees the whole, like oversees creative processes at Nintendo. And same for Takeda, except he's more on the hardware end of things. So nothing too big, nothing really shaking things up there, but some other shifts went on. Some divisions got merged. Nintendo IRD, which we talked about a little bit on the Super Nintendo show, they do a lot of the hardware, and they did Super Punch-Out and Punch-Out and Star Tropics and Pilot Wing 64. They merged with System Development Division, and they are now one.
That's a clinical name.
Yeah,
System Development Division.
It was internal. Internal Research Division and then System Development Division is now merged into Platform Technology Development Division.
Wow.
Yes.
What do they do? They make catheters or something? They probably do something evil.
Well, their primary focuses will be on developing hardware, the operating systems, development tools, and the network. So it's actually a good thing that, because I think the System Development Division was doing... like development tools and the network, it's actually better that now all of those divisions are together so that the hardware, the operating system, the development tools, and the network all work together in a sort of simpatico way rather than being worked on by two totally different divisions and one having one sort of vision for how something should be and another maybe having another. It's better to bring it all together. Nintendo EAD, which was Miyamoto's primary base of operations for the past several years, and Nintendo Software Planning and Development has been merged into Entertainment Planning and Development, primarily game development. That's what they're going to be doing. So I'm not sure what Software Planning and Development had previously done. It was probably in their name, but I'm not exactly sure which games they had worked on. So, you know, just...
Stop doing your research.
I wish you were dead. There's also a new division.
A nude division?
Why are they nude?
I mean, is that like Casual Fridays? And just take it to a different level?
A bunch of old Japanese men having a lemon party. Just
it's probably a lot more efficient than having to pay for their uniforms.
Right.
You know, yeah. Probably the AC. You don't have to pay for as much AC.
Right.
You know, keep the place a little warmer.
I think it's just generally a good idea to everyone show up to work nude.
Yeah, everyone sees each other as equals.
So, they
are.
We
had to edit this joke out, but.
No.
Do you think?
No, I'm not censoring you again.
You may have to on this one. Fuck. It's going to be super gross. I'm super sorry for that. You know how some businesses are really struck to build facial hair? Do you think they need, you know, nude.
Like pube grimace.
There you go.
No, you're.
Do you think they need to keep that nice and trimmed up?
I'm
and, like,
not,
neat
I'm not
and editing
that. That's fine.
It's kind of gross.
I mean, it's gross.
Do you think it's like a thing, like, no, you're getting like too bushy. You got to shave that off. It's unprofessional.
I mean, we didn't edit Griffin Wing's story out of the, so this is not nearly
well, that
as
was,
gross
that was,
as that.
That was literary work. That was art. You were presenting art, so I think that's different.
I'm just speaking
a casual conversation about old Japanese dudes shaving their balls.
No, stay in. So the new division is called Business Development Division, and their specific purpose is to redefine the business model for dedicated video game system businesses. So...
You almost said porpoise there.
Porpoises? No, I didn't.
Almost
it
did.
Wasn't even close.
You almost did.
No, not even a little bit.
We
check
have to record it.
Check the tape.
Check the tape.
Kinda. Neither you assholes are going
to
edit this.
I'm just here to bug you tonight. I don't know what's wrong with me.
I completely forget what we're talking about. Anyway, let's move on.
Business system development?
Oh, yeah. They're basically an actual division at Nintendo to...
I'm proud of myself for remembering
that. Yeah, good job.
They're going to develop strategies for how to promote their console business, which you'd think that something like that existed before, but now they have some dedicated staff to it rather than, you know, one guy sitting in an office, like, maybe we make a commercial.
Well, if you've got a big wig that basically is in an interview and he's like, oh, by the way, that game's coming out.
Yeah.
You know, that's clearly lacking in focus. He might have just said that, and now the developers behind the scenes are like, fuck, now we gotta make another thing.
You think that was like five guys coming to work just like slacking off, and like he walks in with dad, like, so what are you guys doing? And, Pikmin 4. And then he just like, goes and mouths off to some members of the press, like, oh yeah, we're making Pikmin 4. And the five of them is like, fuck.
It's almost done.
The leather chair rolls around, and he's like, Pikmin 4.
I mean, I think that people have been speculating, like, because that really is the only details we have of this game, is that it exists and it's coming out sometime soon. I wonder what they mean by soon. I'm a little skeptical, but...
How excited are you, though?
I'm pretty excited for a new Pikmin game. I like Pikmin. People are wondering if it's going to be, like, a 3DS game, or a mobile game, or a Wii U game, or a game for their next system or platform. I think, like, to turn around development this quickly, it'd have to be a Wii U game, or they'd have to be using the Wii U engine and maybe putting it on their next system, because it came out 2 years ago, and HD games don't take a month. They take a while to cook. So I'm thinking that maybe Wii U, maybe NX, but the fact that these five guys are just able to spit out a game so quickly is pretty indicative that it's probably not something that's for a totally different platform. Anyway, Nintendo did confirm to IGN that Nintendo Directs will continue. Star Fox Zero was delayed to 2016. It's a little bit surprising. A little bit disappointing too, but life will go on. And it was kind of a funny delay because back on one of the mini shows, I don't remember which one, but I was talking about like the three holiday games that Nintendo had coming out, which was Star Fox, Mario Tennis, and the Animal Crossing Mario Party game. Amiibo Festival, that's what it's called. Out of those three games, only Star Fox had a solid release date. The other two are still only slated for like the vague holiday season. So I was suspecting that one of the two of them would probably get delayed, but it turned out to be Star Fox instead. A little surprising.
They jumped the gun a little on that one.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. They stated that quality reasons. Like, they want to polish it up a little bit more is the reason they're delaying it.
How are they not obliged to these release dates that they just bandy about?
I don't know.
Like, they just... Like, I don't... I mean, do the other, you know, console
companies get
away with this garbage?
Yeah, all the time. This is just... Really? Yeah, this is what happens with video games. They'll talk about, like, I think just specifically about other consoles, like Uncharted 4.
Is it like a game of one-upsmanship that they play, where it's someone's like, oh, I'm going to release this, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to release this.
I don't really like the Uncharted games.
I mean, it could be.
Yeah. I don't get it.
I find your opinion valuable, so I'm never going to play them.
Yeah. Do you actually find my opinion valuable?
At times. I was going to play them anyway.
Well, no, you weren't.
You could have just taken that.
Yeah, but, you know...
You just had to probe.
It's you know, it's like you gave me a cake. You're like, here you go. I got you a little treat. And then, like, the inside is, like, either that or it's just hollow in the inside. It's just...
it's just, like, frosting that I propped up with toothpicks? Like, how would you have a hollow...
Much.
How do you have a hollow cake? That makes no sense.
Like, there's still, like, the edge around it. It's just the inside's gone.
That, I feel like that would be a lot more effort than just putting my dick in it.
Exactly, which is much more insulting.
First two thoughts, razor blades?
Maybe
in
it's
it?
Both.
Laxatives.
Maybe it's both. Yeah. Maybe you put your dick in it and it's hollow.
It would be easier if it was hollow.
Wow.
But your dick in it. Yeah, that's clever.
We're the media, we're officially
we're adults.
Wait for it. And then you could be like, John, you put your dick in this cake. And I'm like, yes, I did. And be like, there's no pube. And I'd be like, yeah, I work at Nintendo now. Brought it all back around. Anyway, last news.
But did you have to?
But at what cost?
So, Project Crossbow 2 is getting Fire Emblem characters as well as Fiero from Xenoblade. Cool. I was tempted after the news that they were putting Fire Emblem characters in Project Crossbow 2 to buy it for about 10 minutes. And then I remembered that the first one took me 60 hours and I hated the last 40 hours of it. So, pass. Anyway, should we take a break?
We can take a break.
Yeah, let's take a break.
You tired, John?
A little bit.
Need a breath?
Yeah.
Step back for a moment?
Yeah. I want to give this cake that I made. So let's take a break and then come back with some new releases. Couple of new games to talk about that came out in the month of November. First up, Mario Maker, or Super Mario Maker, as it's now called, came out on the 11th. And see, you guys...
Wait, they added Super to it? It wasn't originally called Super Mario
No,
Maker?
Back when they revealed it at E3 2014, which is Mario Maker.
Like, well, they just shot themselves in the foot, because now whether they're going to call it a sequel.
Mario Maker 64. That was easy.
Yeah, I know, but there was a free slot right there they could have used, and they just ruined it.
I guess.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, whatever.
All right.
Who cares?
Super duper.
Super duper Mario Maker. I like that. There you go.
So you guys played my stages.
I did, yeah.
What'd you think?
They're fun. They're maybe a little bit vindictive.
A little bit?
Yeah. Who hurt you?
They're
show me in the doll where you were touched.
they're not easy.
It's just wrong.
They're not easy. I mean,
But here's the thing. There should be a certain amount of trust that you have in the game developer. And you did this thing on me where you put coins where there was no... There was like, I was going to jump into the coins, and therefore there should be a platform for me to land on. There was no platform.
You did that on another level as well. There's like this big tube and coins all along the side of it into a bottomless pit of nothing.
Yeah, why?
Well, you can kick your way out of it, though.
Yeah, into a thump.
Oh yeah, that you're no. I think you're mistaken. I'm gonna have to take a look at that level again because I don't know.
You're suicidal going on that side. That's what you are.
Okay, so
you
the one
you just hate your life.
So the one that Ryan that you're referring to.
But I like these things though. They're fiendishly clever. When you come up with a good gag to put on somebody, or you've come up with a nice little trick, like the one with you, where it's like it seems like it's a vertical straight drop off of a wall, but you have to hold backwards so you can slide into mm-hmm. the two open spots.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a little thing that you might not know about the game mechanics.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is usually considered good etiquette, proper game design, to not bait people with coins. And actually, the one time that you're referring to in my Koopa Caves level.
It had a purpose. I just didn't do it the right way.
Right. And if I were doing as extensive playtesting as maybe I should have been, I probably would have realized, maybe that's not the best place to... have this platform drop off, because underneath that platform were coins, which of course you went for because you couldn't see the ground, so you figured where the coins are, there's got to be ground underneath, and that wasn't the case. So, I don't know. That level's been posted for a little while, and see, the thing is, and this actually leads me to one of the points I wanted to talk about, is that it's really easy to upload a level, but in order to edit it after you've uploaded it, like if you get some feedback on it, you have to delete it, then re-upload, which is a bit of a bummer.
That's annoying.
Yeah, so if you want to do any little bit of tweaking, or you know, if you unlock some more tools and you want to edit a level that you've already uploaded with tools that you...
Well, I kind of understand that. I mean, it prevents somebody that makes a level that gets mildly popular from going in and deleting the whole thing and then spelling with coins a word that only Wes would say. That would be great, though, if you restarted an old level. Like, oh, this one was really fun to play, and it just says, you know, like, well, pussy fart.
One of the things, though, is, and Nintendo has people working round the clock to work against that kind of thing.
Against pussy fart.
Round the clock, yes. One of the things you have to do is every time you edit your level and want to re-upload it, I guess, in this point, is you have to play it to completion before you're able to upload it. And I would imagine, like, if you want to edit something and update your upload, if you could do that sort of thing, they would make you play it again, just so you know it is possible to beat it. And
do people, can you leave reviews? Can you, like, leave, like, rankings and reviews? And
now, this was something difficulty. I thought was very annoying, because I saw there was this one mission level, whatever, that actually looked really interesting, but I found it to be a little bit more difficult because everywhere I was trying to go, people kept on leaving stupid notes and I couldn't see what I was supposed to freaking hit or jump to. It was really annoying. Like, hey, rock on, or hey, I'm a freaking tard. It's just nonsense.
I think there might be a
is there a button
to
turn that off?
I think so.
Because, I mean, when I was playing it, it was super obnoxious. Like, yeah. I didn't even see a Koopa there because it was hidden behind five messages.
Yeah, and then that's one of the things... That it's, I'm pretty sure there's a way you can turn it off, and it's a good thing that you can, because in the more popular levels, the ones that they promote a lot, you get a lot of people like leaving comments. But see, getting back to your point about, you know, leaving critiques. So, the way that your levels achieve visibility is by people giving them, like, giving your level a star, like giving your level a check mark, like, hey, this, and by leaving that star, you're kind of sending this message like, hey, this is a good level. The only way to leave a critique is to put a comment and, like, maybe say something like, oh, I thought this part was a little too hard, or this part was a little bit sloppy. Maybe you shouldn't do this. Maybe you should do this instead. By putting a comment, you're also starring it. So you may be saying, like, hey, I don't like this about your level, but you're also giving them that little check mark.
So you're drawing attention to them anyway.
Right, right. So, and one of the things about the game that I don't really find... I don't really like is that there's a really limited exposure. Unless you're like really early on, or like you're a YouTuber or something, there's no really good way to get people to try the levels that you've made. So like the day after it came out, there were people who like had made a couple of levels and they had like,
well, they just do generic charts, like chart threads, like, you know, most commented, top rated, things like that.
Yeah. And they do this thing like up and coming, and it's usually levels that haven't had a whole lot of people play them and don't have a lot of like stars or comments or anything like that. And I don't know how you get on that list. But it seems like the only way to get people to play your levels is to already be popular. And
Well, do you prefer building the levels, or do you enjoy playing other people's?
I prefer building the levels.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe there's a lot of navel-gazing and self-indulgence where people would just rather build their own levels and upload them than play other people's.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
That could be a thing.
Just saying.
But see, the thing is, I want people to play my levels. I want, and I would like to get feedback on it. Like, hey, maybe this is a little too hard, and I'll go ahead and dumb it down for all
what
the retards.
What do you have against ground, though? Because in none of your levels are there like a good steady patch of ground.
So here's the thing, and we'll get into talking about some design philosophy here. So one thing that I like to do when I'm making a level is I like to make sure that you're doing a lot of jumping, because it's a platformer. So I feel like if you're, the one thing I try to do is try to keep people constantly in motion and trying to move from place to place. And I have nothing against running along the ground, and I'm actually going to try a little bit more of that with some other level ideas that I have.
You should just do a level that the ground and then comprised a lot of wall jumps.
Yeah,
do a bunch of different corridors and everything with wall jumps to get around.
I do have an idea for a level. I don't want to call it "You Can't Die," where it's a bunch of like jumping and wall jumps, and there is only one way to die, and that's by finding a secret exit. And the secret exit is the only way that you can die. And to kind of charge people with, try to find a way to kill yourself.
Mm. I like that.
And yeah, I think that might be kind of fun to see what I can come up with to try.
So it's
to,
like, the opposite of Affordable Space Adventure.
Right.
You get to the very end, and all that's left is the final thing, and just says you lose.
Right. Right. Like by winning, you didn't find the secret.
Yep. Well, to your strategy of forcing people to have kinetic play, like keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of how I feel like a lot of the Mario games were, where there's giant chunks where if you kind of get down in the dirt, it's going to take forever to get past this short bit of the map. Where if you just have a full, head of steam going into it, you can just quickly jump through stuff. Things that you didn't realize that you could just get past the puzzle by just running really fast and making timely jumps.
Mm-hmm.
Makes the levels so much easier if you can just, hit your jumps on time.
Another thing that I try to do when I'm making a level is I'm really conscious of the amount of space that I have. So one of the first things I do when I start a level is I just immediately extend the goalpost as far back as it'll go. So I give myself as much space, and then when I start trying to build vertically as well. And a bunch of the levels that I've made have multiple paths that kind of crisscross and like multiple areas that you can go up into, and maybe you'll find a totally worthless one up. But you made it up there, might as well reward you with something. And it's something that I like doing. I don't like to have a whole lot of negative space, which is something I'll probably have to start trying when I do what Wes is talking about and just kind of make a ground level. And also, I don't want to... One of the things I don't want to do, and it's something that I'm working on with a Super Mario World stage that I'm working on right now, is I don't want people just to be able to grab a cape and fly through the top of it. And actually, one thing that I'm doing in the stage that I'm talking about is I do want to have that cape be useful. So I want to make...
Well, maybe you could have like a row of the little skeleton Koopas, and all you have is your cape, and you have to mow them down.
Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah.
Just spike walls, just like a tube of it.
Because the cape is actually really cool as a melee weapon. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I would kind of want to do is... And you can't make secret exits, which is kind of a bummer, but you can make multiple ways to beat a level, and kind of have some be more hidden than others.
Well, there was one you actually developed that looked like it was a really cool idea, where rather than getting through like the original Mario where you have the bridge with the lava and the axe, your secret exit was just a sneaky little path around the back to get to the axe, rather than like having to actually fight your way through it.
Yeah, and I think that was probably the first level that I tried to do an unconventional exit. But getting back to the Mario World thing I was talking about, I want to find a use for a cape where maybe instead of flying above the rest of the stage, maybe there's a way that you can skip like the last third of the level if you fly down and there's like a little alcove underneath like a big mass of land that'll take you right to the exit if you're able to use your cape well. Because a lot of times, if you're flying through the top of the level, you don't really have to be good at using the cape, but if, like, they make it to where, you know, if you go too high, you'll bump your head and get shot down. If you go too low, you die. Like, if you can use your cape well to get through that, then you get rewarded by, you know, having this easy way out.
Mm-hmm. Can you string together levels? Could you make, like, your own actual, whatever the maps are, and then the levels and aggregate, where it's like eight.
The different worlds.
Worlds, that's the word I'm trying to think of.
Kind of. So when you're saving levels, you can group them together in fours. So you can have world, it'll be labeled world one, and then your four levels. World two, four more levels. And there's tons of different worlds, so you can string together a bunch of different levels. You can kind of theme them together. Right now, I'm just sort of theming things by just the skin that I'm using. So I have four new Super Mario Brothers ones, and I'm going to move on to Super Mario World. I probably won't do Super Mario Brothers 1 because it's the least interesting, and you can't even pick up shells in that version. There's one of the, I guess, the word is frustrating, even though it's not really, like, infuriating. But one of the things I notice about people levels that people are posting is that it's a lot of Super Mario Brothers 1, which it's just really, really basic. There's nothing... There's no triple jumping. There's no shells. And Mario 3, you can pick up shells, which is kind of cool. But New Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario World are the most interesting to me because you have the most techniques. Like in New Super Mario Brothers, you got your wall jumps, like you mentioned before.
You got your triple jumps. Flutter thing.
Right, you got your air flip. You got and then in Mario World, it's the only game where you can actually throw shells upwards. So there, I got some ideas kind of based around that I'm thinking about because it's a technique that you don't really see used a whole lot. And something that people might not know is that if you're climbing a beanstalk and you throw your shell, if you throw your shell up, you can, and you're holding down the run button, you can actually grab that shell and carry it up a beanstalk with you. So I kind of want to base a level around trying to keep the same shell with you and using it as a weapon throughout the entire level.
Okay, so like instead of Koopas, like there's one Koopa in the beginning,
right?
But there's other. Can you do other enemies so far? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's Koopas, Goombas, the magician dudes, Boos.
Okay, so you're literally trying to hold. So your idea, you want to hold on to the shell while trying to like kill off Goombas and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe have a wizard at the end that you have to kill.
Yeah, something like that. I think the challenge is going to be that in Mario World, you can basically, because Goombas would be tough to use too, because you can grab Goombas and throw them as well.
Yeah, but they can't slide like
shells. Right, they don't, so I'll have to find some reason to make it worthwhile to keep that shell the entire time, rather than swap it out for Goombas as you go. Anyway, so...
I can think of a couple of ideas.
I was going through my notes here real quick to see if there's anything else I want to say. I think my biggest frustration with the game is just the exposure. So a lot of the ones at the top of the list is just real dumb garbage. There's a lot of stages that are just designed to be mean and not in the way that I am mean with my levels where I demand that you have skill. This is mean in the way that, hey, you have to jump all the way over there and you have to fit through this really narrow corridor and there's spikes on either side. It doesn't really demand a whole lot of skill. It just demands that you have a little bit of luck with your jumps. There's also a lot of automatic levels, which I could take or leave. But I find myself, if I just kind of bump into one randomly, I'll try it once, and if for some reason it doesn't work, I'll just skip on to the next level.
Can you go portal crazy, like with the tubes? Can you just keep restarting like maps? You can make giant maps just by going through the tubes, or do they limit you on that space too?
You do have a cap on the total space that you can use. So it's kind of aggregate. You can extend your level all the way, but then if you start doing like sub-worlds within that world using those tubes, it'll all accumulate into your total amount of space. But I mean, you can, as far as I know, you can just go totally crazy with the amount of tubes. You can have tubes like you go down one tube and it spits you out all the way back at the beginning of the level, or it can spit you out of a tube right there next to you, which would be kind of funny. But yeah, I don't... The creation tool is really, really nice. It's really easy to use. It's really easy just to kind of place things down and place those tubes where you want them and have Mario go in and out of them. It did take a few days to actually get that skill to have those warp tubes. It was one of the last things to unlock. The slow rollout of the different enemies and options wasn't that big a deal. It took me a few days to get them all. What is the big deal, though, is you can't update your levels once they've been uploaded. So there were a couple of levels I had to pull back down because there were things I'd always intended on adding to them, but I couldn't. One of my other little grievances is that there's no real friends list integration. So if I have some friends on my Wii U friends list who, if I want to find their levels, I actually have to go into Miiverse, wait for them to post a code of their level, go back to the game, type in that code, find their level. Then I can click on their username as the creator of that level and follow them. And then I can see all of their levels and play them whenever I want. Mm-hmm. And it'll get, and if they upload a new one, it'll let me know because they're a user that I'm following. I don't know why you can't just see who's on your friends list. And if you choose to follow them, just do it automatically from there rather than like re-entering all these different codes. It's only one, so it's not a huge deal, but it seems like, you know, in the year 2015, you should be able to like be like, hey, this is our new game. These are all your friends. Do you want to play your friends' levels in our new game? Doesn't seem like it should be that big of a deal.
I mean, that's what it's computer gaming, but Blizzard and Steam have both cracked that case. Mm-hmm. It's very, very easy to see what your friends are doing and
right.
how you can join games with them no matter what you're playing.
Right.
Yep.
It's like we're living in the future or something. So, I think it's enough about Mario Maker, unless you guys want to... Got anything else?
Sounds like it's like Legos, you know? It's your imagination limits what you can do with it.
Do we want to mention that really weird thing that you showed us?
What really weird? Oh, about the... Yeah, there's this crazy...
Oh, yeah.
Really nihilistic thing that this guy made where it was like
this, do this
psychological warfare going on within this Mario Maker level. Where it's telling you this story as though you're like, what's the idea is that
trying to save your son.
And the punchline is in the end is that you've been so psychologically damaged.
Don't ruin it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a three minute Mario Maker level, and it barely qualifies as a level.
Okay. What do you mean? I thought there was a couple of clever puzzles that you had to actually get through to get from the weird story it's trying to tell you. I mean, a lot of those tricks did not look easy.
All of the things that he's doing, though, is just a conceit around his narrative.
Yeah.
It's a clever little idea, but without like the little coins spelling out what you're doing, it's not.
So you want to get down to brass tacks,
right?
You want puzzles,
right? I want a platform in my platforming game.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a clever idea. It's a clever use.
It's not clever, it's weird, and it's kind of fucked up.
It's very weird.
Someone probably spent a lot of time making
Plus,
that.
Yoshi's not his best friend. Yoshi is a tool.
Yeah, that's true.
There was no Luigi sprite.
No, there was not. Oh, there you go.
Which is weird. Why not have Luigi in the game?
They're going to come out with a Luigi Super Luigi.
Super Luigi Maker. And when, see...
the Mario is missing.
But they do have potential for a lot of DLC because as much stuff is in the game, there's infinitely more stuff that's not in it. They don't have like the rhinos, the Reznors from Mario World.
Yeah,
you don't have the Ripavon fish from Super Mario World. You don't have Luigi, Yoshi. You can only have green Yoshi, but if he eats a red shell, he just spits it out as a red shell. It's not fire. So he doesn't have like have any of those shell specific abilities.
And there's not even like blue shells. So you can give them wings. There's no blue shells whatsoever.
Well, there's some other funkier things like in Super Mario 3 with big versions of everything and you're little.
Yeah.
They don't really include that.
I think they have some giant versions. There's definitely a giant version of Bowser. Oh, yeah. And there are giant versions of things. I can't remember how you do it though.
Oh,
I've seen some people do some levels.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much. If they're going to include everything, it's impossible. Because there's some stuff that has to be.
Is there a frog suit?
There's no frog suit.
What the hell?
I mean, I don't know how you... I guess it wouldn't be that big a deal, but I'm not sure how you would manifest a frog suit in, like, Mario World or New Super Mario Brothers.
They got propeller suits.
They do have the propeller suit, but the propeller suit replaces the feather or the Leaf in Mario 3. So you only get like the flying suit specific to that particular version.
Say like the stationary fire wheels. Can you control the length of the fire wheels?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can control the length of them. You can control the height at which the fireballs pop out. You can do all sorts of crazy things like have cannons shoot out Koopas. You can put things onto other enemies' backs. You can have a Koopa riding a Goomba if you feel like it. And that's another thing that I see a lot. I see a lot of levels where people just kind of throw all these enemies riding other enemies at you. And at some point,
it would be
kind
of cool if they're... I mean, I'm not sure how the interaction would work between all of the enemies, but if you made it so that in order to actually successfully get to the end zone to beat the map, you need to take out the last of your enemies, but every enemy prior to it you had to defeat to get some... thing that was needed to kill the next one. Like, I mean, again, that shirts says it's up to your imagination to create one like that, but I don't know. There's probably lots of really, really fun, clever things you can do.
Yeah.
But this doesn't populate the leaderboard. It's just, like, really mean, spiteful levels that require incredible luck.
Yeah, there was one level that was at the top for a while where it was just kind of based around... It was a swimming level. You get a Yoshi at the beginning, and you have to... keep your Yoshi until you get to the very end, and just this gauntlet of enemies thrown at you, just really narrow paths that you have to take through.
I kind of want puzzles. I don't necessarily want like to be so obsessed with constantly having precision the whole time as it is like coming up with the smart ways to solve things, understanding how all the items in the game interact.
There's that is something interesting, and that's not really what I put into my level design, but there is a friend of mine who does a Nintendo podcast called This Nintendo Life. He put out some levels, and I'll put a code for his level in the show notes. He did a level that is sort of based on Metroid. So there's a power-ups you can get that sort of that change your skin. So at the beginning, you get this power-up that changes you from a Mario to a Samus little sprite. And you're running through this underground stage, and it's built like Metroid in that you have... he starts you off by going into a warp zone. It kind of spits you down to the middle of the level, and then branching off on every side is different paths you can take. But there's a certain order that you have to take the path, because the one path you can get into... At the end of it, there's something like a P-switch, and you hit that P-switch, and you have to run real fast, and that opens up another path. And that path you take, you get like maybe a star at the end, and it allows you to speed your way real quick at the beginning through like a gauntlet of enemies that you wouldn't be able to get through otherwise.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, it required a lot of thought, and it took a lot of effort to build, clearly. But yeah, it really did... do a pretty good job of capturing that sort of like puzzle adventure spirit of a Metroid game, which is pretty impressive considering he did it using platforming tools. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so also out, Shovel Knight Plague of Shadows came out on the 17th. It was a free DLC update to Shovel Knight. And
oh, you were pretty big on that.
Yeah.
Like what? How long has it been? Like a year?
Yeah, it's been a year. I think it came out in June of 19... God damn it. June of 1994.
That's it's exactly. 21 years old. I got a drink.
June of 2014. God damn it. The thing about Plague Knight, I think the expansion is called Plague of Shadows, is you play through as, of course, Plague Knight throughout the levels, and the level layout is nearly identical. Which I think speaks really well about their general level design, is that they throw in this character who operates really differently from Shovel Knight, and the levels still work. Shovel Knight, just by example, the character, is all about your jumping and your mobility. So, of course, he's got like his down thrust of the shovel kind of acts as a pogo stick when he's going off of enemies and obstacles, things like that. So there's always this really great sense of forward momentum to the character. Plague Knight doesn't have that. Plague Knight has a double jump, and then he has a triple jump to his double jump, which you have to charge up. And a lot of him being able to move around the level is based on that third jump. So he can't bounce off an enemy, so he needs that third jump to overcome higher obstacles, overcome longer distances. But it also leaves him vulnerable, because unlike Shovel Knight, he can't attack enemies directly while he's in the air. All of his attacks, his attack is projectiles. He throws bombs. Mm. So, Shovel Knight has all that forward momentum. Plague Knight does not. But all of the levels still work really, really well. And again, that really speaks to how well they designed this game initially, that you can have such a different character and have all the levels still work. There's a really great customization to the character too, and it's really different from Shovel Knight. So, you have your standard attack, like with Shovel Knight, he's got a shovel. Plague Knight throws a bomb, or up to three bombs, I think, directly in front of him. And you can do all sorts of customization with like the bomb cases. Some of them will bounce in front of you, some will arc up. You can have different types of powders, which will affect the type of explosion you're getting, and also fuses, which of course affect how long it takes for them to blow up. You can also like customize his triple jump. So in order to do that triple jump, he's just
does he get like an awesome backflip while he's in the air or something? Or
I haven't found one yet, but maybe.
Does he do like a somersault?
So what'll happen is, so far I've gotten two different types of that triple jump. So when you hold down your attack button, which you throw a bomb, it starts charging up your triple jump. So you can't use your attack while you're getting that ready, until you've used it, which is one of the things that really limits his mobility. So the different things you can do, like standard just vaults him in the direction that you want to go, and it vaults him a lot faster than his normal jump, so you need to exercise quite a bit of control when you're using that triple jump. But you can add things to it, like after you've executed your jump, you sort of float down as opposed to fall down at your normal rate of speed, kind of like the Princess Peach way of floating around. Hmm. There's also one where as soon as you execute that triple jump, you send a projectile straight forward in front of you. So it's a way that you can take out an enemy or two that's standing in your path. There's also temporary HP expansions. There's regular HP expansions. You get an extra little heart container, so to speak. You can also like use a potion, and it gives you a temporary heart container until you die. And you can stack those on top of each other. You can carry a maximum of 5 potions, and you can find them scattered around the level, so you can really max out your HP when going for a boss fight. And the boss fights also still work really well, even though they haven't really changed at all since Shovel Knight. So, and Shovel Knight, you approach them in such a different way because you're trying to find a way to get on top of them and stay on top of them, whereas with Plague Knight, you're trying to find your opening, where they're going to be stopping, so you can throw your projectiles at them. Mm-hmm. There's no towns really to speak of. There's like this one area where you can purchase some upgrades, but there's, of course, you're not really interacting with any of the townspeople because you're playing as one of the villains. One of the cool things about entering a town though is that you're kind of running around behind the scenes, and you can see Shovel Knight moving around throughout the town on his own. Oh, yeah. on his actual quest, because it's supposed to be taking place simultaneously with Shovel Knight's quest. So yeah, it's a really cool expansion to the game. It feels really, really different to play as Plague Knight, but yeah, it's cool. It's good.
Wait, so it was Plague Knight a character in the
He was
the villain?
Yeah. I kind of had that pterodactyl-looking face.
Oh. Right.
Did you play a whole lot of Shovel Knight?
Only with you, actually. It was a really fun platformer.
Yeah, it's really good. Mm-hmm. So, also out, I don't really have anything to say about any of these, just mentioning that they exist. On the third Gunman Clive HD collection came out on the Wii U. The Wii U. The Swindle also came out on the Wii U eShop on the 10th. Zombie Defense and Year Walk also on the Wii U eShop on the 17th. Senran Kagura Deep Crimson came out on the 3DS eShop on the 17th as well. And Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer will be out by the time we post this podcast. And I'm sure everyone's looking forward to your thoughts, Wes.
That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
I
if I could get you a review code, would
what do you mean a review code?
If I could get you a code from Nintendo to review it, would you play it for review?
Sure. We're cool. Press, as has been established. Yeah. We are press.
I'm gonna send them an email and they're gonna respond, weren't you the fucking guy who was joking about our pubes?
Yes, we have them.
It's like, who told? Who told you?
We just get nothing but dick pics from Nintendo. See?
I don't think that would be their response.
I don't think so either, but...
They might tell me to eat a dick.
They are Japanese, so yeah, they are weird.
Dude, racist? What the fuck? Real racist.
That's terrible.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
It really is awful. I mean, this is a nation that's provided us so much entertainment, so much content, so much gaming.
We should be thanking them.
Yeah. This is coming from the guy who said,
oh, well, okay.
That actually is getting edited. That's happening.
Just bleep that one.
What was even the context for that?
Don't remember. Okay. But it was an awful thing to say, and it's going to be
really funny listeners. This is the cover of the guy that beep.
No, it'll be a Pikachu. It'll be a Pikachu cry. Anyway, let's take one more quick break and then come back with some games coming out in October. We got a bunch of games to talk about coming out in October.
Here,
yeah, they're different tabs. Wes is going to read the descriptions.
Where are the tabs? That's how this thing works. Okay.
Yeah. So their description, Wes is going to read them game by game. And because it's fun. It's fun to have Wes do it. So Wes, let's start with Chibi-Robo Ziplash.
Chibi-Robo Ziplash comes to the Nintendo 3DS system with a fresh new take on the franchise. In this side-scrolling game, Chibi-Robo uses his plug and cord to whip enemies, grapple onto ledges, and swing across chasms. Power up the plug and cord to search for collectibles and explore previously out-of-reach areas. Alright. Features! The bullet points. Comes bundled with Chibi-Robo Amiibo figure, because nobody would actually buy that.
I like that that's not... Well,
they
you,
have
you
to
say
give
that.
That away.
You say that. People would absolutely buy that. I wouldn't.
Climb, jump, run, and throw your plug-in cord in this all-new platforming game. That is in the description. They do this every time.
Keep going with those bullet points, Ross. We've got no time to waste.
Whip enemies and ricochet your plug-in cord off walls to solve puzzles. Tons of collectibles! Tap the new Chibi-Robo Amiibo figure to power up Chibi-Robo into Super Chibi-Robo, or use a toy capsule machine to unlock the in-game collectible features. What the frack? It's just weird.
Are you done with Chibi-Robo?
It sounds like you're describing...
I'm saying
really
Chibi-Robo
shitty,
50 times.
A shitty version of Bionic Commando.
Is it like Bionic Commando?
It does look like a platformer with a grappling hook.
Yeah, hang on. Don't move on to the next one yet.
Am I going back to Chibi-Robo?
No, you don't need to go back to Chibi-Robo. You can queue up Yoshi.
Prep for the Yoshi world. Is this what you want me to read right there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nintendo's description was a little bit hard to find, so I just went with the IGN one. Chibi-Robo, it does kind of seem to operate like a Bionic Commando.
Okay.
But it looks pretty cool.
They really want you to whip a lot with your power cord.
They really do. And you can get extensions for it. So there's that.
Is it in the form of a blue pill?
No. No, Wes, it is not. That was distasteful. But I'm looking forward to this one because it's been a little while since I put a platformer on the 3DS. So this year, the 3DS games have gotten Majora's Mask, Codename Steam, Devil Survivor, Professor Layton, Phoenix Wright. No real platformers to speak of so far this year. So it'll be nice to play a platformer on that device again. There's going to be some things I'm looking for specifically when I play the game. I'm looking for what sorts of ways they come up with to use the cord. Is it just going to be like a grappling hook? Are they going to come up with other uses for it? Will Chibi-Robo gain new skills as he plays through the game? Will there be different uses for that cord, or like other reasons for him to be a robot in this game? Other than the cord, we'll see. And you mentioned collectibles, Wes, which is the magic word. I'm curious to see if they'll be rewarding to collect. Because if it's just like, have you a gallery full of keychains like in Mass Attack, not Mass Attack, Triple Deluxe, I'll probably just pass.
Yeah, which is surprising, because you really don't pass on the collectibles. Mm. Usually just less 100%
this. My time is valuable, Wes. My time is valuable. That's why I don't always 100% games and I turn off the animations in Pokemon.
Your time is valuable, because you clock 70 hours. And you haven't beat the gym.
Yeah. And you still have more Pokes to collect.
I do. I have 2 more Pokemon to collect. But you know, when we talk about... Pokemon on the next show, I might be a little bit more positive on the 6th generation than I've been in the past.
Yeah.
Might be a little more positive.
It's growing on me.
I'm coming around.
So the Anastar gym, right? 6th gym. Mm-hmm. 7th gym in the game is the psychic gym.
Yeah.
Remember me telling you there was a moment in the game that truly dazzles you with its design? That's the stage where you walk into the room and it's just like a ho-hum room like any other one. And he's like, guy's like, oh, this is a psychic trainer. Prepare to get your butthole worked over. And then you walk into the middle of a thing and then the walls just fall apart. And mm-hmm. you're like in the space of this woman's mind trying to fight her with your Pokemon or something. How insane is that? There's fucking stars everywhere. You're in this full 3D globe environment. Like, how awesome is that?
I mean, the traversing throughout that gym and figuring out where you're supposed to go is probably the best use of polygons in that game.
Oh, man, that's cool.
But yeah, it was...
I don't think I've gotten to that gym.
It's a cool gym.
Because I didn't beat this generation. I think I'm pretty much as far as where I've gone.
Yeah.
You're going to beat it this time.
I'm going to beat it this time.
So let's move on to Yoshi Woolly World.
All right.
Coming out to the Wii U on October the 16th.
Embark on a new Yoshi adventure in a world made from yarn, cloth, and textiles. Pulling on strings in the game usually leads to discoveries, while new transformations include a motorcycle, mole, and airplane. The game's simple platforming adventure challenges players to find hidden secrets. Tapping select amiibo characters to the gamepad creates new patterns for Yoshi, while the new Yarn Yoshi amiibo lets players control 2 Yoshis at the same time. This first ever 2-player co-op Yoshi game includes Mellow Mode, which gives Yoshi wings, and is perfect for players who just want to hunt for treasure, or newcomers who want to get the hang of the game. Okay.
Is that the end?
That's the end of that.
Cool.
So there's a new Yarn Yoshi amiibo.
Yes.
Alright, and then you can tab different amiibos to change your look or something?
Yeah, basically to unlock a different like skin swap.
Essentially, you'd be like Link or something. And just
Well, no, you actually are still Yoshi, but you have a color scheme that's more like Samus.
Oh, it's just a color scheme change.
Well, I mean, anyway, after the show, we'll Google some images because they're still very much shaped like Yoshi, but their color scheme. The color scheme makes them look a little bit more like Samus or Tuna. He's looking at the gym. He's looking at the psychic gym.
Holy crud! What the hell?
Oh, by the way, Aaron.
What? All right.
And the fucking shooting star. Oh man, this is gorgeous.
that's an acid trip. All right.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet, isn't it?
I can't wait for that gym. Mm.
So, Yoshi's Woolly World is already out pretty much everywhere else in the world. It's a game that I think North America is the only territory it's not released in yet, but it's gotten mostly positive reviews. Some of the reviews are a little bit on the mediocre side, but Goodfeel, the developer of the game, did some really cool stuff with this whole yarn aesthetic and Kirby Epic Yarn. So I'm still looking forward to it. Some things I'd like to see, the things I'll be looking for when I play the game is. If they're able to expand on some of the ideas that they had in Epic Yarn, sort of the way that how everything being yarn affects the way you play the game. Because in Epic Yarn, you're doing a lot of like pulling and unraveling. And I'd like to see that continue and see what else they can do in Woolly World. I'm looking forward to the co-op, which Wes, you mentioned before. I never got to try co-op in Epic Yarn. Maybe this time around I'll be able to convince someone to play with me. And I'm also really looking for it being able to strike a balance between being like a really chill experience and having some challenge to it. From what I'm hearing, like collecting some of the collectibles throughout the game can get pretty challenging, but I also want that to be rewarding. Like I don't want to just go after collectibles just because they're there. I want I want to feel like that a sense of accomplishment from being able to get it. Anyway, let's Wes, let's move over to Legend of Legacy coming to the 3DS on the 13th.
Now, before I read this, I'm going to comment that I actually don't like games who have this kind of style to it.
Kind of the chibi anime style?
They got like big heads, and I feel like I'm playing Big Head Mode of NBA Jam. It's just...
Didn't you like Big Head Mode of NBA Jam?
No, I did not.
How did you feel about Wind Waker?
Yeah, but Wind Waker wasn't really... That was more proportional. That was more proportional.
Yeah, Toon Link's like, should I go bust out my Toon Link amiibo and check out how proportional he is?
Okay. If you have Toon Link's head, there's always exceptions to my gripes. Shut up.
I just
how dare you prove
judging
wrong.
You for judging the game.
This is nothing but judgment in this show.
Yeah.
With seven different perspectives from which to experience the adventure, whose story will you unravel first? I can't wait.
Probably just one story. I'm not playing through the game seven times. What is this, Bravely Default?
No. A mysterious island emerges, prompting adventurers to head towards it in hopes of obtaining glory, treasure, and more. But what does it truly hold? Join the seven characters in the Legend of Legacy to unravel the mystery of Avalon's past.
Do we have any bullet points?
No.
Oh.
I'm still reading.
Oh, okay, sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off.
There's paragraphs here. There's multiple ones.
Is that more of the title, by the way?
What do you mean?
The past as well? Like, so it's what, Legend of Legacy?
It's just Legend of Legacy, that's all I see.
Oh, okay.
Those two are kind of synonyms.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, it's talking about the legend of a long lineage of people. Right. So how far back in time are we actually going?
Explore Avalon and discover each character's motivation in traveling to the island. I don't care. With seven different perspectives from which to experience the adventure, whose story will you unravel first? I just read this.
That sentence sounds really familiar.
What the hell? They put it in two different spots. Perhaps the elementalist who uses spirits as his guide. Oh, great. Toxic Ghost. Or will you sympathize with the Frog Prince ripoff, searching for more of his kind? Pick your characters wisely, as team formations and specific combat roles are crucial in battle. The Legend of Legacy staff roster includes familiar names like characters designer Tomomi Kobayashi, renowned composer Masashi Hamuzu, writer Masato Kato, game designer Kyoji Koizumi.
God, it's a delicate with the language, too.
And Masataka Matsura.
And President Jeff.
With such a legendary staff breathing life into the game, get ready to embark on the quest of a lifetime. What the... Alright.
So, this game is coming out.
I was paying the butt to read.
On the 13th. This is why I like when you read it, and I love the Nintendo.com descriptions of the games, because they repeat so much stuff. It's hilarious.
It's really bad.
Can we make you go through those names again? I mean, you got them, you heard them the first time, they were rough. Maybe this time we'll be
right.
Here
we go.
Alright, we're doing this.
Quetzal Tanaka.
Tomomi Kobayashi.
Kobayashi.
Renowned composer Masashi Hamauzu.
This rolls off the tongue.
Writer Masato Kato. Game designer Kyoji Koizumi. And Masataka Matsura.
That's Koizumi.
Koizumi, sure. Alright, there you go. Matsura. There's two U's in his name. Back to back. Like, they're just right. There's two U's.
Oh, Matsuura.
Ura. Alright. Ura.
I just said it the way I wanted to say it and hoped it was good. I just said it with authority.
Ura.
Anyway.
Ura.
Ura. I like that.
This is getting nowhere.
Do we need to poker rap now? So, there's
I'll do the singing. You guys do the hard part.
So, I played a demo of this game. There's a demo available on the 3DS eShop. And I went from this being a game I was probably going to buy to this being a game I'm definitely excited to play.
Lots of Blitzball?
Through seven times.
No, not seven times. And as of yet, no Blitzball.
Okay. There's going to be characters like Walker, like, I don't give a fuck about that guy.
Well, thankfully, there's limited voice acting. So, It has a lot of the things in a JRPG that I like. Specifically, the battles are not random. The battles are turn-taking. It doesn't take place in real time. And it has limited character customization, but not over-the-top character customization. So you have a party of three. And so far in the demo, I've only been locked to three characters. But from what I'm hearing about the game is you... get the rest
it's
of the
more than double.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get to experience all their backstories, their Legend of Legacy. Yes.
Well, see, the thing is, when you start the demo, you pick your main character. And I went with a character that had some healing abilities because I didn't want to...
Like, how many were of...
Seven.
Oh, so you literally choose which one you want to start.
Yeah, you got to choose any one of the seven. And then when I started up the game, two of them, I don't know if it was at random, if they were specifically, like, these characters are assigned to be together. Two of their characters were assigned to the party. You kind of bump into them through some story conceit at the beginning of the demo.
It'd be really cool if it's random, because then why do you just get screwed?
It's true. I mean,
you're a healer and you get paired up with, like...
another healer and a mage. it's going to be rough. But, you know, even my healer has some offensive capabilities, so... What you can do with your three characters is you, of course, equip them with different weapons. And as you play the game, the more you use that weapon, your skill with it will increase. You'll learn new techniques. So not only magic costs MP, I think it's called SP in this game, but not only magic uses it, the different skills that you use, the different characters use it. So a character that's really adept with a sword will learn sword techniques that will cost your MP or a bow. And you can have multiple weapons equipped to characters. One of my most useful characters right now is kind of a speedy thief sort of class character, and I have both bows and swords on him. And I have another character who is very defensive, and he's got a big claymore equipped onto him. And then my mage girl, who I started with, I have spears on her. So... There's some limited customization, but, you know, if you're equipping different weapons onto people and, like, switching them out, you can have them learn a lot of different techniques. So it might be easier to mix and match parties that way if you're kind of thrown with two other random people. But one of the other big things about this game is that there is this really heavy emphasis on exploration. So... You have, like, your starting town, your base of operations, and you have your world map, and you kind of just select your location. You're basically entering, like, a dungeon-type area. You're not doing any traversing over the world map, but when you get into your dungeon area, you have different rooms, and the rooms are pretty expansive, and it's mostly outdoor locations that I've been in so far. And you move around, you find items and treasure chests lying around, and then there's also a map on the bottom screen that you're filling in as you go. It's not like Etrian Odyssey where you have to, like, draw up the walls and everything, but it's like auto-filling as you go. And when you 100% complete the map, you're able to go back and sell your information, basically sell your chart of that area. And that seems to be the primary way of getting money. Like, you find, like, little, like, bits of jewels and cash and stuff lying around.
So, like, merely exploring the map is going to be beneficial.
Right. So not only will you have a better idea of where you are and where you're going, but selling a jewel that you find might get you 100 gold. Selling a map of an area might get you 3,000.
Well, I've been playing an RPG lately that is a great dungeon crawler, but at the same time, it's made me not want to explore the entire level so much as it is that it makes me want to find the baddest bosses so I can quickly kill them and then move on to the next bad boss. It would be nice to be incentivized to simply just explore the terrain, just to see the environment.
Yeah. And this game does this really weird thing. It's clearly an intentional choice, but as you're moving throughout the level, you have this really limited vision of the terrain around you. So as you're getting toward the edge of the screen, there's nothing but flat terrain, and as you move, you kind of see the trees pop up as you get closer to them, and that kind of stuff. So it's this cool little effect, and eventually I don't even notice it anymore as I'm moving through, but I kind of wonder why that was part of the design. Maybe it is just to encourage a little bit more exploration, kind of, like, give you this idea that
Does the fog go away? Well, you're moving forward and you look behind you, it's gone?
Or, well, it, or do you map it out as you go?
It's well, you're mapping it out on your screen, but what happens is it's the as you move forward, like if you're moving toward the right, the trees to the right will pop up, and then the trees behind you that you're leaving behind will go away.
Oh.
So you always have this this more limited than the edge of the screen's visibility of your surrounding terrain. And it's a little strange, but like I said, you get used to it and you don't even notice it anymore.
It's like a fishbowl kind of thing? Like,
yeah,
kind of. Everything's warped around you?
Yeah, a little bit like that. Yeah, it just...
It makes me think of Okami. The whole fishbowl thing.
Yeah.
Keeps you in this one little thing.
Yeah.
In the fights.
Yeah, that's definitely something that happens in that game. I can see how that would remind you. That's reasonable.
Yeah, it's popped in my head.
So...
I give tribute.
So, The battles. I do want to talk for a second about the battles in the game. Of course, like I mentioned before, you have three. You are inputting all of your commands and then telling your party to execute them. And one of the really important things, like you're reading the description, is the formation. So you have a formation that's all attack. It's just everyone straight in a line. You also have a formation that's more defensive, where you have your tank character up front and your two characters hanging toward the back. And the formation doesn't necessarily affect the damage the enemy can do to you based on front and back row, but what it does is it affects your own stats. So you have a formation where you're putting your one character up front that actually augments his defense, and he has a skill where he you can input a command for him. Instead of using an attack, you can input a command that he blocks your other character, so he's absorbing all of your damage. And then... your characters in the back, they're set to an attack stance, so they're more inclined to deal damage than they would have been if they were in a different stance. And you can actually customize your own. So I did one where I had my one character up front defending to absorb all the damage, one character who was my heavy hitter doing all the attacking, and then another one set to support, which makes her more effective with magic and healing and that kind of stuff. And the cool thing about these stances and these formations is you can change them in the battle. Like every turn, you're selecting your stance and then your moves.
But so like if you had maybe someone that could work well in the front line, be a little tanky, but also had some heal, if you got in trouble, you could kind of push him to the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can heal up or then move him to the front if you're like feeling pretty safe, if you're not taking much damage.
Yeah, exactly. So the battles... they're usually, 9 times out of 10, pretty interesting because of the different formations you can...
Do your opponents do the same thing?
I've never seen them shift formation, but they do come in different formations. And a lot of times, especially as I was getting toward the end of the demo, I was dealing a lot of damage, so I wasn't really picking too many different formations. So one thing that it does do, which is nice, is that whatever... formation and stances and moves that you pick for your characters the previous turn, it's automatically set up for that default the next time. So you can just like tap the A button a few times, it'll do the exact same thing you did before, which is handy for when you're trying to just work your way through a long battle and you know this formation's adventure is going to do its job.
Hmm.
It does have some really nice user-friendly stuff. The auto-filling map is cool. Also, all of your HP refills after every battle, which is nice. Kind of like the Xenoblade approach, to where, you know, it doesn't overly punish you for getting into a lot of counters.
Well, would the game theory push you to the brink then? Would it be like go all out attack, glass cannons, because you know you want to test their survivability?
Well, here's the thing. Your HP refills, and actually fainted characters also come back after your battle if they die in battle. But what'll happen is let's say you have a character with 100 HP. And he gets attacked with an attack that takes away 60, and then another attack that takes away 60. You didn't have a chance to heal up. So he's actually 20 in the hole. When he is revived at the end of the battle, his max HP will actually be at 80.
So, there actually is a pretty steep penalty for...
Right.
Yeah.
And that persists until you leave the area, go back to the inn, and rest up. Then you get that back.
Okay.
So it rewards, it makes it easy to stay in an area and continue to explore, but there is some sort of punishment to recklessness. So you want to make sure your characters are always healed up in battle and that they're not fainting. It doesn't...
I like that.
Yeah, it's a really, really nice touch, because you do have that consequence, but if things go wrong in battle and you're still able to make it out alive, it's not like you have to leave. So, you know, you get into an encounter early, it goes bad, you have to leave and rest up at the inn immediately afterwards. Hmm. Yeah, it's really nice. Oh, and also, I'm not sure how I feel about this yet, but when you flee a battle, it kicks you back out to the entrance of that area. It doesn't, like, kick you out of the area, but just send you all the way back to the entrance of that area. So it's kind of pushing you in the direction of, hey, you want to fight these battles. And it equips you to do it by refilling your HP after every battle, but you can't just run away from battles all the time. Otherwise, you're never getting anywhere. Anyway, Wes, should we move on to Fatal Frame?
Oh, it is that type of tablet.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, look at that. It's one of these LG things. Ooh, fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And turn back on because you talk so long.
I do tend to go on. God damn it, you're going to edit this.
Hey, clean pipes. Let him have clean
Come
pipes.
Come on, I mean, I'm reading something here, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The Fatal Frame series lives again! Fatal Frame, Maiden of Black Water, is comprised of three interconnected stories that converge to uncover the truth behind a recent string of tragic deaths and a forest marred by a history of suicides. Wow, alright. As one of the three people with the power of the camera obscura and the ability to see the shadows of those spirited away, you'll explore the ruins of an eerie inn, a shrine filled with life-sized dolls, and a lake full of dead priestesses. This is super, like...
This sounds awesome.
This is just...
Take the kids. This sounds fantastic.
This sounds like a place I want to take the kids. Each shadowy location is connected by a stream of water flowing throughout the mountain, and this once holy water is tied to the darkest mystery of all, the history and death of and darkness on Mount Hikami. All
right. Do I have bullet points?
There's bullet
points.
Yes! Features!
Gimme.
Download this free-to-start game and play through the prologue, Chapter 1, and most of Chapter 2 for free. Survive this horrifying new entry in the Fatal Frame series. Explore sinister locals like an underground cave for human sacrifices and a shrine for life-sized dolls. Okay.
Yes, like you said before.
Thank you. Good job. Use the Wii U gamepad controller as your camera obscura, your only defense against fatal ghosts. Mount Hikami is cursing with inexplicably dangerous water. Stay dry or die. Investigate and stay alive on the deadly Mount Hikami. Alright. Apparently we're going to this mountain.
I like that those two bullet points are right next to each other. That's delightful.
Apparently we're going to this place.
So yeah, Ryan, like you said, I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for horror games in general. And I like getting the cheap thrill out of a good horror game.
And there really aren't, you know, outside of some independent games, there really aren't a whole lot of horror games around anymore.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think a lot of people say the new Alien game, not for this platform, but the new Alien game for PC is like one of the best ever made, quite frankly. It's really, really good.
When you think of...
There's a lot of games like Amnesia that came out and...
Yeah, Dark Descent.
Dark Descent. Yeah, really they're around. They're Fear, just not as a classic abundance. One.
Yeah, that's true. But Fatal Frame is an established series, too. Mm-hmm. Fatal Frame has been around for a while.
Let me rephrase. Some of those established horror series have kind of gone away. Like Silent Hill, you don't really see those games anymore because, you know, Konami doesn't make games anymore. Resident Evil became just strictly action shooter games. So it's nice that these kind of games still do exist in one fashion or another. And it's nice that this has a chance to become a long-running series again. I mean, it's not like super long-running. I think the first game was on the PS1 or PS2. No, I don't remember. Wes, pick one.
PS1.
PS1. First
Dreamcast.
Sega Dreamcast.
That's a Vita.
Oh, God. Just give up, Sony.
So...
Well, it's also interesting because it's not a game. It's a game that had, like, first-person element because you have this camera, but it's more of a safety mechanism. It's not like you need to have weapons to fight.
Oh, so you've played it.
Defend. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the Fatal Frame series. I mean, like I said, I love horror games.
Well, we'll play this game together, then. We'll hold hands.
Yeah. This will be great. Oh, yeah.
And actually, one of the questions I had about the game, I didn't really get that from the description, is I'm not, like, I'm excited to play this game because I'm really unfamiliar with the series. Like, I don't know, like, what the mechanics of the game are. Like, how do you progress? What's the, what are the ways of the character? And, do you have abilities that, like, change throughout the game?
In the past,
do you, like, gain new stuff?
Well, rather than getting, like, if it were a Resident Evil, you'd get the guns to shoot the zombies. Mm-hmm. The idea is that you have this camera, and it lets you sort of... So you can see through the lens of it, and it has limited power. And I think they usually have, like, a battery pack or something like that. It can't just run forever. Which is kind of a weird thing about games, that the batteries last for 10 minutes, when in real life, batteries tend to last longer than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But at any rate, in this one, that's the idea, is that you're looking for ghosts, you're looking for them, because they're going to try and sneak up on you, and you can't see them if the camera's down. But, like, you'll walk into a long hallway, and it looks fine. And then you bring up the camera, and then way off in the distance is this little thing that's, like, off in the distance. You don't know what it is. But then you take a few steps forward, you look at a door, you bring the camera back up, and it's, like, right in your face. Or it's, like, right there on top of you. And you're like, holy shit. Like, that's the idea, is that it wants to get these good scares out of you.
Nice.
And you can use the camera to capture and release the soul. Not capture, but just, like, to release the spirits of them, I guess you could say.
Sure.
And I recently read that if this is a suicide forest we're talking about, there actually is a suicide forest mm-hmm. in Japan.
Yeah.
Where people go to kill themselves.
Yep, sure is.
And there's people that patrol it to try to prevent people from killing themselves.
Yep.
So
it's a thing.
Fatal Frame is a series. I haven't played it in, like, I can't tell you, like, a decade probably, something like that. A really long time.
Well,
but
you know,
I dug it.
They're not exactly making it easy. There was Fatal Frame 4 was for the Wii, and it never came to North America. And then there's also a remake of Fatal Frame 2 that was also on the Wii that never came to North America.
Okay.
So they're not making it easy to actually play this series.
Are there any other horror games on the Wii? Like, scary games?
No, not really. There's, like, a couple on the eShop.
When are these games coming out?
Fatal Frame is October 22nd. On the Wii U eShop only. It's not getting a physical release, which is a bit of a bummer. But I'm sure I'll be able to, like, print up an English version of the box art somewhere.
But if you'll provide me a tangent, I think with the 3D, like, all the people that have, like, the Oculus,
mm-hmm.
like, things that force you to wear a mask so you can't escape an environment, I think two types of games are going to see a renaissance. The first of which is flight simulators, like space shooters, things like that, are going to be incredible when you're in the cockpit and you can just look around everywhere. Second, horror games, where you can't escape. Because, like, I play them all the time, and you just sometimes have that impulse reaction where you just, like, slap the escape key. You're like, get me out of this. And if you have the mask on, if you're wearing that, you just can't do it. You're trapped in it. Like, I think it's really going to revitalize the genre.
And it's one of the interesting things about horror games, because so much of horror is just that feeling of helplessness. Like, you can't control.
You've got to give yourself to it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You kind of have to, like, just sit there and, you know, dig your nails into the armrest and just enjoy it.
Which is why it's such an interesting genre for video games, because video games are all about how you're controlling something, but they're trying to take away your controls of certain situations. I mean, they did it with Resident Evil. They did a lot with, like, static camera angles and things like that, trying to force your perspective. Fatal Frame, it sounds like there's not a whole lot of ways that you can fight back other than with your camera.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. I'm interested to see how they sort of balance that sense of hopelessness with or helplessness with, you know, being a video game and actually you having to control things, having to do things in order to progress in it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and I think the Wii U gamepad is particularly a good vehicle for the type of game that uses a camera, because rather than, like, pulling up a separate screen on the TV to show your camera view, you can just hold up the gamepad in there. Like, you still have what's going on the TV, but then you also get that second view, like your camera window, basically, on the Wii U gamepad. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, VR headsets could also definitely be a nice vehicle for that.
That was just a tangent in my head.
Yep.
But yeah, I really like horror games, so I'm pumped to hear about this. This will be kind of fun to play.
So, let's move over to the last one, which is Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes coming to the 3DS on October 22nd.
Right off the bat, looking at this, I go, this seems pretty cool, but at the same time I go, Nintendo is still trying this shit.
Yeah, it's still trying to get Four Swords right.
Oh my god. Alright.
But they stripped it down to just the Triforce. So it's
right,
four, no, it's three.
Three, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
too convoluted.
There's three links. They're each different colors. but everybody needs their own 3DS.
Yes.
So you gotta link up with other people.
Well, yeah, they you need your own 3DS and you need your own game cartridge.
And apparently, when is this coming out?
October 22nd.
It's already the winner of best handheld / mobile game.
I think at E3.
Yeah, which is kind of funny.
Well, E3 was several months ago, so.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny.
It's still the winner.
Yeah.
They don't redistribute.
Nah, it's still weird. Yeah. In the visual style of the critically acclaimed The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds game, comes a new adventure. In this journey, three players team up, each as Link, to cooperatively make their way through inventive dungeons and battle bosses. Use this new totem mechanic to stack three Links on top of each other to reach higher grounds and solve puzzles. Collect loot to create wearable outfits, each with a different boost or ability. Different outfits.
I feel like we're already in the bullet points.
We're accessorizing, guys. Features!
Can they come?
Three Links.
Different outfits.
Similar visual style and top-down view of The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds.
No. 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 That is not... One of the features is that it looks the same as another game?
Yep.
What the fuck? Alright.
The candy was so sweet, we didn't change the formula.
I mean, I get it. I get why you did it. You wanted to make another game, you wanted to do it quickly, so you use the same engine and assets as you had before. That's fine. That's not a feature. feature of a game. Hey, let's do the same thing as you did last time. That's a feature.
Sure. As Link, buddy up with two other Link characters and cooperatively solve inventive puzzles to progress through the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All three players share hearts, so they must work together to defeat enemies and solve puzzles. There you go. That wasn't in the description.
There. Good. There. Excellent.
Shaking it up.
Neither was this game looks like the other game. That wasn't in the description either.
Stack three Links. Yeah, actually it was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was. Based on the critically acclaimed. Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Stack three Links on top of each other with the new totem mechanic, which makes it possible to reach new locations and solve puzzles. That's almost word for word.
Yeah. It's so
good.
They
literally copy and pasted that sentence.
I love these bullet points. They're so good.
Collect loot to create wearable outfits, each with a different boost or ability. Each dungeon is structured with four main areas.
I feel like we could make a game out of the descriptions, like name the bullet points. Because I just keep on coming back.
Single player mode allows the player to rent two paper dolls to take along to complete the team of three and face challenges in dungeons. Well, he's not going to be taken seriously. He shows up for a big boss fight. He's got two dolls with him. You're like, what is this? Playtime? No, this is stupid. No, I mean, come on.
Dodongo's going to be like, did you brought your sex dolls with you? That's weird.
Whatever works for you, man. I'm not into that, but you know. Choose from a set of emoticons to communicate with each other while playing in multiplayer mode. Or, you know, Skype.
It's true.
Or do it in the same room.
Make some friends.
Human interaction.
I don't know. Are you guys going to buy this?
Team up with two other players in multiplayer mode via local wireless connection online and with download play.
Oh, there's download play?
Yeah.
Nice. Maybe we could play together. Yeah.
You want a hug?
No.
Hug it out?
No.
Come on.
No.
Man hug?
No.
No gay?
Alright, fine.
No homo. Anyway, that's all the bullet points.
Okay, good. So yeah, like you said before, it looks like four swords, but it looks like they're doing some things right, because, you know, you have online play, so you don't need to have everyone in the same room, you don't need to, like, tether your DSs together or anything like that.
And it has the visual style between
them. Yes, thank you. Oh, also, one of the nice things about this is that it has, like, actual puzzles and boss fights, whereas, you know, four swords a lot of times just throw you into an environment and go chop down some bushes and get some cash and find your way out. Whereas this, it seems to have more...
That establishes a totem mechanic, so you have to sit on top of each other.
It's true. You gotta love it. And there's a button. Because you don't have voice chat over the internet in this game, there's the button, and it's basically sends out a message to the other players that says, totem time. to let you know that it's time to stack up. I'm going to be spamming that button ruthlessly. Yeah. Just, hey, it's always totem time.
One thing that, I mean, do you have to pick a different color Link, or can you be the same color Link? Because it looks like the Links are also different. Like, the green one's got a sword, blue one's got, like, a bow, And the red one's like chucking bombs or something. Like this picture of him with fire, like he's some kind of mage.
I have a feeling it might be assigned rather than pick a different color, but you do, like, there are certain levels where you are able to choose from a pool of weapons. And it's like four swords where, you know, one person has a bomb, another person has a gust jar, so on and so forth. So, and then those are the tools you need to solve puzzles throughout the game, and you have to use them in tandem together in order to overcome your obstacles.
This game does look good with more with actually playing with people. Mm-hmm. This actually does look pretty interesting, especially if they made the levels really in-depth, and you're figuring it out as a team and everything.
And it, one of the things that I do wonder about the game, and that I'll be looking for as I'm playing it, is are they able to keep it interesting in single-player mode? Because having like three different links that you can swap between in order to solve puzzles, it doesn't seem nearly as interesting as playing with other people.
No.
Now, the other side of that is...
Sounds like more work.
How easy will it be to drop out of levels if you end up matched up with someone online who is just terrible?
I probably wouldn't play with some random person. Like, this would be one of those once-play things I'm only going to play if someone I know is playing it with me.
Maybe.
Because there would just be... Because
it's cooperative.
I play a lot of online games, like League of Legends, and I just started playing Destiny. And people are jerks and idiots. Yeah. And people will troll you, and it's really freaking annoying.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're trying to have a good time playing a game, and people get a kick out of ruining it for everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean so it's like when we're, you know, playing Mario, and, you know, I run off the stage, you guys try to catch up.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happens.
Or if you double jump on somebody's head and knock them into oblivion.
That's a great, that's another maneuver. I think the game intends you to do that.
Except it's different trolling over the online, over the internet with strangers than it is trolling with your friends.
That's true.
Because, I mean, when you're sitting with your friends, you never know when you're going to get a nunchuck in the face.
Well, everyone's in on the joke, basically.
At
when,
that
when
point.
You're sitting, when you're sitting with friends.
Especially when you're sitting on the floor in front of the couch and you get a nunchuck in the face.
I don't remember what you're talking about.
Wink, wink, cough, cough, John.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, come on, man. That wee boxing is intense.
you deserved it.
It's like I felt like I was actually boxing.
I think it's going to bring the show to a close. So, it's going to wrap us up for the month of September.
I didn't do the book report, though.
Oh, do you have... Are you ready? You seem unsure.
Oh, I mean, I'm not going to do it in the middle of the poker show.
I'm going to save it for the mini show. Unless you feel strongly you should do it right now, because this is your chance.
This is my opportunity?
Yep, the floor is yours. So you need to make a decision here.
I'm going to try, but if it comes out it's crap, we're going to edit it out.
Okay, go.
All right, so
Twilight.
What do you think the show's long enough? We should just end it.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Just end it. I'll do it on the main show.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, we're at an hour and a half already.
Can you tease us? What book?
I mentioned it on the last one. It's the book is called Steelheart. The series is called The Reckoners by Brandon Sanderson.
Nice.
What's it about?
You're trying to bait me into doing this.
It's just two-sentence synopsis.
Give a good tease.
Give a good tease?
Give the listeners a reason to go read it.
Talking about Brandy Sandy.
People with superpowers are dicks. How about that?
Cool. I like it. So it was like the show Misfits, then. Yeah? No?
Less fun. More just killing people for no reason.
Oh, gotcha. Well, a lot of people did die in Misfits.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I never finished it.
I am, you know.
The series kind of derails.
After that one guy left... Yeah. And got replaced by that
other, yeah,
dude
by Rudy.
Duplicated himself, yeah.
I mean, Rudy wasn't so bad in season 3. Like, season 3 was stomachable, but seasons 4 and 5 were just train wrecks. Like, they were no good.
I mean, did they actually, like, end it on a note? Like, this is a clear ending and blah, 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 or they just kind of left it out in the open?
I really don't remember. I don't remember how they ended the show Misfits.
Well, on a similar note, they're trying to relaunch Heroes.
Yeah, they are. Did you ever watch that show when it was...
Not really. I saw a few episodes.
I think I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah. That's what people complained about, is that it just had a really great premise, just failed to live up to the potential of what it should be.
Well, it's really slow at the beginning. That's why I never really got into it. Like, episode 1, it was a giant bore to me.
Yeah.
Well, I think that a lot of people really fell in love with the first season, and then there was that big writer's strike. right as I think they were getting to like season two or three, but they continued the show and I guess brought in like non-union writers or something like that, and it just kind of went to shit. And then I guess the show just never came back after that until now, I guess. But anyway, that there were a lot of people that really loved that show, and I watched the first season and some of the second season, but there was a part in the second season where there's this girl who, I guess her superpower was when she observes people doing something, she can then do it herself. And she like observed WWE wrestling on television, and then it's like someone breaks into her house and she like does some wrestling maneuvers on them, and it was just a little too absurd in the show where humans have superpowers. That was a little just, it was a little too much. It was like in The Lost World where the girl fought off raptors with gymnastics. It was a little silly. Anyway, so next week we're starting it all back up with the Pokemon show.
It's a great game. Do you have something juicy for us, Ryan?
I'll find something. Don't you worry. And I'll try to keep the age range appropriate.
no more children.
Yeah, let's
make it fun for
we have time and time again taken a stand that, you know, pedophilia is wrong,
right?
Evil.
Yes.
And we certainly shouldn't condone it by including works of art, fictional works of art that portray what happens when a giant
when
fire.
The sun goes down.
Yeah, when a lizard with wings rapes a young boy.
Yep. Well, I'm pretty sure it was consensual. That was the context I was getting.
Consensual.
Doesn't make it was statutory.
But is he old enough to know what consent even means?
Sure.
That's the big question.
Now,
now we're getting real philosophical about this.
We need to have Griffin Wings on to explain how this even happened.
No, we've discussed this before. I think on the last show we discussed we're going to have him on and have the police waiting for him.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Who was the guy with the Catch a Predator guy?
Chris Hansen.
There we go. We got to get him on there. Yeah.
Have them both. All right. So until next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.